भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमम् देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयेत् नष्टप्रायिष्व भद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवति उत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिकी कृष्णे स्वधामोपगते धनमग्नानादिभिः सह कलौ नष्टदृशामेष पुराणार्को धुनोदितः ग्रन्थराज श्रीमद्भागवतम् की जय. दिस् इस् दि fourth canto and chapter 24, chanting the song sung by Lord Shiva. We're on text 36. I think it's the third of the verses spoken by Lord Shiva. This is also known as Rudra Gita, and in the manuscripts it's often just referred to as the Jitam Te Stotra, Jitam Te Stotra, because the words begin, if you recall the other day, with Jitam Te. So, please repeat. Namo Namo Niruddhaya Rishikendriyatmane. I'm sorry, Rishikeshendriyatmane. Rishikeshendriyatmane. Nama Paramahansaya, nama paramahansaya, purnaya nibhritatmane, purnaya nibhritatmane, namo namo niruddhaya, rishikeshendriyatmane, namah paramahansaya, purnaya nibhritatmane, namo namo niruddhaya, rishikeshendriyatmane, namah paramahansaya, purnaya nibhritatmane, namo namo niruddhaya, rishikeshendriyatmane, namah paramahansaya, purnaya nibhritatmane. Namo namo niruddhaya, rishikeshendriyatmane, namah paramahansaya, purnaya nibhritatmane, namo namo niruddhaya, rishikeshendriyatmane, namah paramahansaya, purnaya nibhritatmane, namo namo niruddhaya, rishikeshendriyatmane, namah paramahansaya, purnaya nibhritatmane, namo namo niruddhaya, rishikeshendriyatmane, namah paramahansaya. Can you hear?
No, I can't.
Hare Krishna. Purnaya. Unto the Supreme Complete. Nibhrita Atmane. Who is situated apart from this material creation. That's translation by Srila Prabhupada. My Lord, as the supreme directing deity known as Aniruddha, you are the master of the senses and the mind. I therefore offer my obeisances unto you again and again. You are known as Ananta, as well as Sankarsana, because of your ability to the whole creation by the blazing fire from your mouth. Kindly repeat, my Lord, as the supreme directing deity, known as Aniruddha, you are the master of the senses and the mind. I therefore offer my obeisances unto you again and again. You are known as Ananta, as well as Sankarsana, because of your ability to destroy the whole creation by the blazing fire from your mouth. Purport. Hrishikeshendriyatmane. The word, the mind, is the director of the senses, and the Lord Aniruddha is the director of the mind. In order to execute devotional service, one has to fix his mind on the lotus feet of Krishna. Therefore, Lord Shiva prays to the controller of the mind, Lord Aniruddha, to be pleased to help him engage his mind on the lotus feet of the Lord. It is stated in the Bhagavad Gita 9:34, Manmana bhava mad bhakto mad yaji mam namaskuru. The mind has to be engaged in meditation on the lotus feet of the Lord in order to execute devotional service. It is also stated in Bhagavad Gita 15:15, Matta smritir jnanam apohanam cha. From the Lord come remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. Thus, if Lord Aniruddha is pleased, he can help the mind engage in the service of the Lord. It is also indicated in this verse that Lord Aniruddha is the sun god by virtue of his expansions. Since the predominating deity of the sun is an expansion of the Lord Aniruddha, Lord Shiva also prays to the sun god in this verse. I'm going to stop here and we'll make a few comments and then we can go on and finish. There's another paragraph in the purport, but this is significant. This verse is it's a good example of how, or rather I should say why, Srila Prabhupada said that the purports are more important than the translations. Maybe I should repeat that. The purports are more important than the translation. Think about it. The purport is meant to explain the translation. So how can it be that the purport is more important than the translation? Because sometimes the meaning isn't always clear, especially if the translation is very literal. The intended meaning is not always clear. We require, as they say in the commentaries, Swami Charanat, to hear from the lotus feet of the Acharya, in order to understand anything of the Vedic wisdom. What is the concluding verse of Shvetashvatara Upanishad? Anybody know? Famous verse. Yasya deve parabhaktir yatha deve tatha gurao tasya iti kathita hi artha prakashante mahatmanaha. Unto that great soul who has equal faith in God and in his guru, to that person all the confidential meanings of the shastras are automatically revealed because of his faith. So in this verse, Srila Prabhupada says that Lord Shiva is addressing the sun god. And that's nowhere evident in the text itself. At least it's not explicit in the text itself. So how do we know that Srila Prabhupada isn't just making this up? We have faith. Very, very important to have faith. But that faith is justified also. I've looked through the commentaries on this verse, and Srila Prabhupada is almost verbatim paraphrasing Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in his purport to this verse. And Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur also is not inventing his interpretation out of whole cloth. He's following Sridhar Swami, who wrote the same thing in his commentary on this verse. And Sridhar Swami is the original commentator on the Srimad Bhagavatam. Svaivam parampara praptam, imam rajar shriyo vidu, etc. We have to understand these things by the mercy of the Acharya. Coming into Siddhic succession, we have a glimpse of as to what the meaning of this verse is. Now that we've established that, we can go on and listen to how the Acharyas are taking apart each of the words in this verse and how they're interpreting that this is a reference to the sun god. First of all, why do we give so much prominence to the sun god? In Vrindavan, Govardhan, where I live, you sometimes see people when they come out first thing in the morning, if they see the sun, what do? They fold their hands and they say, Om Namo Narayanaya. Why? Because the sun god is also the representation of Narayana. Here we're saying that Aniruddha is a representation of the sun god, and I'm saying that the sun god is himself a representation of, well, in effect, Aniruddha, Narayana. Yat chakshuresha savita sakala grahanam raja. The king of all the planets is the sun. He is the eye of the Supreme Lord, as it were. It's an interesting point. Yat chakshuresha. Lord Brahma, his realization, we're talking here about the realizations of great personalities. This verse is the realization of Lord Shiva, and it's corroborated by the realization of Lord Brahma. He sees that Govinda, or the sun, Govinda as the Lord of the sun, he sees that the sun is the eye of the Supreme Lord. Our own eyes are useless without the sun. He is the eye of our eyes, just like he is the soul of all souls. So yat chakshuresha savita, that sun is like the eye of the Supreme Lord, and samasta sakala grahanam raja, and he is the king of all the planets. The sun is considered to be the best of all planets. Samasta surya murtir shesha teja, and what is his characteristic? Ashesha Teja. He is infinitely pushing out these divine rays that provide everything in this world with life. Any biologist will confirm that without the sun, this closed system, this biological system of the world as we know it, it will shut down. It will not work. We all depend on the sun. And he's giving out this Ashesha Teja, infinite power. We are invested with that power of the sun in order to perform our physical activities, at least, what to speak of other activities. So Lord Brahma prays like that. But it is by the order of Govinda that this sun is performing his Kala Chakra duty. He mounts the wheel of time and traverses the three worlds, giving light, distributing light and therefore life to all the creation. So, dhanamothapapanichaya shrutayastapangsi brahmadi kita padagavadhyasya jiva yad datta matra vibhavam prakata prabhava govindam adi purusham tamaham bhajami. Not only Brahma, but actually to all living entities, whatever power is coming from Govinda. Not only whatever power they possess, whatever virtue they possess, whatever vice they possess, whatever penances they can perform, anything they can do, the power to act is coming from Krishna. Therefore, Lord Shiva is praying to Krishna as Hrishikesha and Indriya Atmane. So let us continue. Srila Prabhupada writes, Lord Krishna, by his quadruple expansion, Vasudeva, Sankarsana, Pradyumna, and Aniruddha, is the Lord of psychic action, namely thinking, feeling, willing, and acting. There are four things here. There are four deities here. What are these four deities called as a group? Chaturvyuha. This is Pancharatra analysis. Vasudeva, Sankarsana, Pradyumna, Aniruddha. Have we heard these names already in this stotra? Yes, we heard it yesterday. He was praying to Vasudeva first, then to Sankarsana, then Pradyumna indirectly, and now Aniruddha. So he's addressing the Chaturvyuha here. And Srila Prabhupada says, on the basis of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary, that this Chaturvyuha, they are controlling your thinking. They're controlling what you feel. They're controlling your will, your desire to do something, your prerogative, or what is the word we use for this? Your intention, sankalpa. And finally, your acting. So Aniruddha, we're looking at action right now. Aniruddha, you cannot do anything. You cannot act. You cannot see. You cannot do anything practical without the mercy of Aniruddha. Why is that? Let's continue. Hare Krishna. Lord Shiva prays to Lord Aniruddha as the sun god, who is the controlling deity of the external material elements which constitute the construction of the material body. Does anyone understand that? Should I repeat it? Lord Shiva prays to Lord Aniruddha as the sun god, who is the controlling deity of the external material elements which constitute the construction of the material body. That's one thing. So Aniruddha, or the sun god, whom Aniruddha represents, he is controlling the material elements with which our bodies are constructed and with which we act. How do we know this? Anybody read Second Canto lately, chapter 10? Just after the 10 topics that are given in the Srimad Bhagavatam are listed in a few verses there, there's a very nice verse which I would like to read here, because Srila Prabhupada gets into this a very important analysis.
Before we do that, sorry, but can we just move forward, because otherwise this will be continually happening.
Okay, yeah.
If someone can just help, 2 seconds, so move this thing.
Srila Prabhupada discusses three concepts that we find in our philosophy. Adhi-atma, adhi-daiva, and adhi-bhauta, adhi-bhuta, you can say. So how do we usually hear these terms? Adhyatmic, adhi-daivic, adhi-bhautic. What do we think of when we hear these terms? We think of the miseries of material existence. This is maybe because it's the most relevant thing for us. Srila Prabhupada stresses this. But in fact, these are three ways of analyzing our corporeal existence. And they're very important. And this verse, or at least the interpretation that the acharyas give to this verse, it's resting on this threefold system. In fact, another one of the Vaishnava acharyas, Vallabha Acharya, he bases his whole philosophy on these tripartite, you know, system. Adhibhuta, adhideva, and adhiatma. So what does that mean? Srila Prabhupada explains very nicely, as I mentioned before, in Canto 2, Chapter 10. The text is number 8. For anybody who's taking notes, you can look it up. So, yo dhyatmiko yam purusha sausao eva vidaivikaha yas tatrobhaya vichedaha purusho yadi bhautikaha. The individual person possessing different instruments of senses is called the adhyatmic person. In other words, the embodied jiva who enjoys through his senses, he's called adhyatma. And the individual controlling deity of the senses is called adhideva. That is, in this case, Aniruddha, or Hrishikesha, or the sun god, or however you want to look at it. All of our senses have a deity that's controlling them. And any of the deities of any one of our senses has a deity controlling them, as I mentioned already from Brahma Samhita. Whatever potency they have to give potency to our senses, that's coming from Govinda. This is the topic of the, I think it's Kena Upanishad. Yamaraja, I think it is, he asks, by whose power does the eye see? By whose power do the ears hear? We're answering that question now. So the adhyatma person is the embodied living entity. The adhidaiva person is the controller of that embodied living entity. And finally, here we have the embodiment seen on the eyeballs, Prabhupada says, in his characteristic style, is the adhibhautik person. So the material existence that we think exists in reality, in other words, our illusion of maya, that's adhibhautik existence. All the bodies. And Prabhupada explains in his purport here. It's a little bit difficult. But he says, all the controlling deities like Vishnu, Brahma, and Shiva are different manifestations of the Paramatma feature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, who exhibits himself in such manners by entering into each and every universe generated by him. We're seeing some other manifestations. Prabhupada mentions this Trimurti, Brahma, Vishnu, Mahesh. We're looking here at Aniruddha. We're looking at the sun god also. And there are others, other representations. They're described in chapter 10, the last verse of which Prabhupada quotes in the beginning of this purport, just to give us some context. So Prabhupada says, still, apparently there are divisions of the controller and the controlled. For example, in the food controlling department, the controller of food is a person made of the same ingredients as the person who is controlled. We're all food. One living entity is food for another living entity, and that other living entity is food for another one. And in one of the Upanishads, I forget which one it is, it says that even Lord Brahma and Shiva, they're nothing but the rice and pickle of Lord Vishnu. Similarly, each and every individual in the material world is controlled by the higher demigods. For example, we have our senses, but the senses are controlled by superior controlling deities. We cannot see without light, and the supreme controller of light is the sun. The sun god is in the sun planet, and we, the individual human beings or any other living being on this earth, are controlled by the sun god as far as our eyes are concerned. Similarly, all of the senses we have are controlled by the superior demigods, who are as much living entities as we are. But one is empowered and the other is controlled. Even in human society, don't we see this? Some people are disempowered. Other people are empowered. And the result is that some of us are controlled and we resent that. Or some of us may be controlling and we enjoy that because of the envy. So, the controlled living entity is called the adhyatmic person, and the controller is called the adhidaivic person. So we may be someone else's adhidaiva, but we are also somebody else's adhyatma. All these positions in the material world are due to different fruitive activities. Any individual living being can become the sun god, or even Brahma, or any other demigod in the upper planetary system by a higher grade of pious work. And similarly, one becomes controlled by the higher demigods by lower grades of fruitive activities. So what is the scheme here? If you engage in pious activity, you become a controller, which is easier existence. If you engage in impious activities, you will become increasingly controlled. Think about it. If we don't like to be controlled, now you have the key. So every individual living entity is subject to the supreme control of Paramatma. who puts everyone in different positions of the controller and the controlled. That which distinguishes the controller and the controlled, namely the material body, is called the adibhautik person. So here we've been discussing adhyatma and adhidaiva. Here's adibhuta or adibhauta. What does it mean? That Brahma's body is different than your body. There are different grades of material bodies, even though all of them are adibhuta, but some of them are superior and some of them are inferior because of the different grades of pious work, and they manifest greater or lesser degrees of adhyatma or adhidaiva. So, and then Prabhupada concludes here, the body is sometimes called purusha, as it is in this verse, as confirmed in the Vedas in the following hymn, sava esha purushon narasamaya. This body is called the annarasa embodiment. The embodiment depends on food. The living entity which is embodied does not eat anything, however, because the owner is spirit in essence. The material body requires replacement of matter for the wearing and tearing of the mechanical body. Therefore, the distinction between the individual living entity and the controlling planetary deities is in the annamaya rasa body. How do you tell whether you're a demigod or not? Look in the mirror. Have you got four heads? No. You're not Brahma. So the distinction between living entities in this world is on the basis of the body. But there is a parastasmatu bhavo nyo vyakto vyaktat sanatanaha. There is a transcendental reality to all this karmic business, because we're dealing in the realm of karma here. This entire analysis is only valid once you enter or are involved or interested in the realm of karma. Once you enter the akarma platform, they cease to be relevant. You're no longer the adi, atma of some adi-daiva. And you no longer have to worry whether your adibhuta position is superior or inferior to someone else's. So here we're talking about the sun god in particular. And Srila Prabhupada is paraphrasing Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. I'll continue to finish his purport. He says, according to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, the word Paramahamsa is also another name for the sun god. Now that's a new one, isn't it? Anyone heard that? Paramahamsa is another name for the sun god. Actually, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he's quoting a Shruti mantra in order to support this assertion. He says, it's in Sanskrit, but Hamsa Shuchishat, that's a Vedic mantra that he quotes to show that the name Hamsa is actually a name for the sun god. And Parama is also referring to the sun god. So, Prabhupada continues here. The sun god is addressed here as Nibhrita Atmane as well, which indicates that he maintains the various planets by manipulating the rainfall. Because he's in the position of the Adhidaiva, he has that degree of control. He can control the rainfall. How? We generally hear that maybe Indra is in control of the rain. So how's the sun doing this? Anybody know? Saṃsāra dāvāna lalitaloka trāṇāya kāruṇya ghanā ghanātvam. Prabhupada explains in this way. The sun god evaporates water from the seas and oceans and then forms the water into clouds and distributes it over the land. When there is sufficient rainfall, grains are produced, and these grains maintain the living entities in each and every planet. The sun god is addressed herein as Purna. Anybody heard the word Annapurna? Annapurna. Or complete, because the rays emanating from the sun have no end. Have we discussed this already? Ashesha Teja. That's the same thing as saying that he's Purna. He's complete and perfect. He has no diminution. For millions and millions of years since the creation of this universe, the sun god has been supplying heat and light without diminution, Prabhupada says. The word Paramahamsa is applied to persons who are completely cleansed. When there is sufficient sunshine, the mind remains clear and transparent. When there is sufficient sunshine, the mind remains clear and transparent. This is pretty abstruse stuff, isn't it? We don't usually hear these kinds of analyses. But Prabhupada explains. In other words, the Sun God helps the mind of the living entity to become situated on the platform of Paramahamsa. Thus, Lord Shiva prays to Aniruddha to be kind upon him so that his mind will always be in the perfect state of cleanliness and will be engaged in the devotional service of the Lord. Just as a fire sterilizes all unclean things, so the Sun God also keeps everything sterilized, especially dirty things within the mind. Because the controlling deity of the senses is whom? Aniruddha. And the controlling deity, well, the chief of all the senses, the Indriya Atmana, as it's stated in this verse, Indriya Atmane, the soul of the senses, if you will, is the mind. And the controller of the mind is Aniruddha. Aniruddha is the expansion of Krishna, or you can say also represented in the Sun God, and that Govinda is allotting everyone's karma since time immemorial and supporting all living entities. So, just as fire sterilizes all unclean things, the Sun God also keeps everything sterilized, especially dirty things within the mind, thus enabling one to attain elevation to the platform of spiritual understanding. This is a very roundabout way of looking at the same thing that we do every single day, when we rise early, take our bath, come to the temple to see Rukmini Dwarkatish, and chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Lord Shiva is simply analyzing that process in terms of this threefold distinction between Adidaiva, Adhyatma, and Adiputa. Now, Sridhar Swami, I mentioned, he has given the essential ideas that Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has elaborated on. He says, Hrishikeshanam Isham, yet Indriyam Manas Tadatmane. The Lord of the senses is Krishna, and the Lord, the controller of the senses, I should say, is Krishna, and the Lord of the senses is the mind, Manas, Atmane. Surya Rupena Pranamati Paramahamsaya Suryaya. He's giving all the definitions here, that Suryaya means, Paramahamsaya means Suryaya, and he's offering obeisances to the Lord in the form of Surya. Purnaya, Tejasa Vishvavyapine. He is called Purnaya because by his potency he is pervading the entire universe. Vishvavyapi. Vyapi means to pervade something. Nibhritatmane Kshaya Vriddhi Shunyaya. He doesn't have any kind of decrease in any way whatsoever, therefore he's called Nibhritatmane. So we worship the Sun God. Why not? When we chant the Gayatri Mantra, what do we reflect on? That within this adibhautic level existence, the sun is absolutely necessary. Because our bodies are maintained by the sunshine. We cannot live without it on a physical level. And then if you go to the heavenly level, then you also require the sun on an intellectual level, a subtle plane. You require the sun to clear the mind, to clean the mind. This is what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says here. Mat chakshur shri murti saundarya eva pravartaya dehagatam suryatmakam tejas chashudhyata tubhyam nama iti. He's offering his obeisances because he wants the Lord in the form of the sun to purify his mind. And the sun or Aniruddha are the same thing. And then if you go to the swa level, the sun is also pervading there. What's the rest of it? Tatsavitur varenyam. We're meditating on the effulgence of the sun god. What does that effulgence represent? Brahmajyoti. Exactly. Swatejasa Vishvavyapine, as Sridhar Swami said. His universal pervasion in the form of this Brahmajyoti. It's represented in the sun. Bhargo Devasya Dhimahi. And he is that effulgence is belonging to Deva, to the Lord. Tanno, what is the rest of it? Yeah. Prachodayat. We're enthused if we meditate in this way. If we come outside and we see the sun and just think about whether we're going to get UV rays, that's not a very elevating reflection, is it? If we come out and see the sun and we think of Hrishikesha, or we think of Aniruddha, or we consider all these diverse actions, how the Lord is pervading His creation, how He's controlling our senses, how we can become purified by His agents in these ways. That's much more elevating. It's Krishna conscious. And in a very seed form, Krishna gives the same idea in chapter 10, as I mentioned earlier, well, as Prabhupada mentioned in commenting on 2.10.8. Prabhupada refers to Bhagavad Gita chapter 10. Throughout that chapter, Krishna gives so many other examples, how He is represented in this material nature, how we can see Him and become Krishna conscious and purified by reflecting on these things as His manifestations. Otherwise, what are we going to see it in terms of? Adibhautic existence. We're going to see it in terms of sense gratification. And we'll become increasingly entangled with so many desires that generally pull us down, especially in the modern culture. And then we become increasingly controlled by the very agents that we're not meditating on. And then we suffer. So these prayers are very, very deep. Very profound meaning is given here. But we don't understand any of it unless we hear from the Acharyas, particularly from Srila Prabhupada. I've read the commentaries in the original. Jiva Goswami doesn't say so much directly about these verses. He's talking in a very general way. But Sridhar Swami, I mentioned, has given the seed ideas. Mainly they've been developed by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, and Srila Prabhupada has expanded in his inimitable way with so many additions that are very sweet. So very, very, very deep purport, fascinating purport, so interesting how Srila Prabhupada is expressing the import of the simple words spoken by Lord Shiva. Who would have known what these things mean? How vast and how profound this wisdom and realization of Lord Shiva is regarding the Supreme Lord. We had Prithu Maharaj, the incarnation, and his son's name was Vijitashva, and later on Vijitashva, he was called Antardhana. Antardhana, is his son was Havirdhana, and Havirdhana had as his son who? Barihishat. And Barihishat later on became known as Prachina Barhi, and his 10 sons, they're called the Prachetas, because of their character, because of their purity. We've already read those verses. And their dedication to their parent, to their father and his order, they became blessed with the association of a great devotee like Lord Shiva. So we can see how exalted is Lord Shiva that he has such high realizations of the Supreme Lord. And his words, simply spoken, just 4 lines, but they're so deep meaning that the Acharyas have been expanding on this for ages, for hundreds of years. Similarly, Lord Brahma, as I mentioned. These are the personalities that we should try and follow. Does anybody have any questions or comments? Archit Prabhu?
A very profound class, and I know personally it was on short notice, so I really, really appreciate it. Interesting that Prabhupada mentions here that the sun cleanses the mind.
Yeah.
But our experience, at least in Kali Yuga, is just the opposite, that wherever there's sunshine, there's licentious and hedonistic behavior.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. That's why we have to meditate on the import of these things, particularly in chapter 10 of the second canto. That is a very, very, very important part of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Why? Why is it so important? Because the essential message of the Bhagavatam is given in a very pithy form there. The 10 topics of the Srimad Bhagavatam are listed, and then he has this discussion of Adibhuta, Adi-Atma, and Adi-Daiva. It's important to see life in these ways. We are affected by all these relationships. They do impact us. They may challenge or they may encourage our practice of spiritual life, depending on how conscious we are. The knowledge is here for us to take advantage of. So people are absorbed in the adipotic level. Therefore, they see the sun as the agent of sense gratification without seeing that the sun is the agent of their own karma. It's a lack of God consciousness. So, Asprabhu.
Yes, Prabhu, thank you for a wonderful class. My question is that Lord Shiva, he's speaking here very profoundly to the Prachetas because they deserve it, as you just mentioned. I'm wondering, why don't we ever read that Lord Shiva actually preaches in the same fashion to his followers. You know, we know that he has certain kinds of followers that go everywhere with him. Why isn't it that we hear something of that caliber, him preaching like that to those faithful followers of his?
Well, just as we were mentioning these adhidaivic beings, Lord Shiva is one of them. He is the predominating deity, well, of many things, but in addition to many other things, he is the predominating deity of the mode of ignorance. And those persons who are in the mode of ignorance, they really have no access to elevation in life other than the mercy of Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva has to present things to them in ways that they can appreciate. Lord Shiva hangs out with them in crematoriums. He covers himself with ashes. He does so many things. And he preaches Mayavad philosophy, which Prabhupada many times throughout his book says is in the mode of ignorance. Why? Because it's simplistic. A simplistic religion is tamasic. Have we seen this? A simplistic religion that happens to be tamasic? I think so. You know what I'm talking about. So that's tamasic religion. And for people who are attached to the mode of ignorance, how are they going to be elevated? Someone like Lord Shiva has to come along and try to bring them up somehow or other. But you'll notice that amongst his own people and his dear people, Lord Shiva says the real thing. Kailasha Shikare Ramye Gauri Prichati Shankaram Kasya Stotra Maheshwara. In the Smriti Shastra, we find this Gopala Sahasranama. So one day, Parvati came to Lord Shiva and said, "Listen, I always see that you're in meditation. So who are you meditating on? I thought you're the supreme person." And he says, no, you don't understand. I'm meditating on Krishna. And he's got these thousand names, and here's what they are. So, and even as Shankaracharya, when he incarnates as Shankaracharya, yes, he preaches the Advaita philosophy, simplistic philosophy, to attract those who are in the mode of ignorance but want to be spiritual. But he also says, Bhajagovindam, Bhajagovindam, Bhajagovindam Murhamate. And other things also. Pranabhata Govindam Paramanandam, Shankaracharya says. And Prabhupada always reminds us throughout his books, Narayana Parovyaktat. Narayana is above this creation. He says the real thing. He cannot hide it. Sometimes devotees try to cover themselves up and go mix in the material world. People always notice there's something different about this person. You can't hide it. So whatever is most dear to your heart, you cannot conceal it very much. Sometimes it's going to come out, and we've seen that with Lord Shiva also. Is that okay? However, to be more direct than that even, Lord Shiva does go public with his bhakti as well. In what form? Ever heard of the Rudra Sampradaya? I mentioned Vallabhacharya, Vishnu Swami. That's his line. He has his own Vaishnava Sampradaya. And they're preaching pure bhakti. Pure bhakti to Govardhan, as a matter of fact. So, he's also, Lord Shiva is the Vaishnavanam Yathashambhu. But he has to accommodate. Just like sometimes some of our ISKCON sannyasis, they become a little bit controversial sometimes because they change their presentation to accommodate a certain particular class of people. So it's like that. Lord Shiva, he gets way out there sometimes. Because somebody has to do it. It's compassion. As we learn in the eighth canto, Lord Shiva is very compassionate and he's thinking of others' welfare. Anything else? Okay, all glories to Srila Prabhupada.
Nice to meet such a pundit.
Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. That's great.